CliffCentral.com.
It's a game of give and take. I really hope that wasn't Mabali's dad's opening line.
Yeah. I was about to say, this probably came before the Marvin Gaye to set the scene.
Yeah, so if you are wondering, the choice of music this week while Gareth is away is songs that we think that we've been songs that you may be conceived to. Mm. So tomorrow it's all about Sia's songs. Today was Mabali's songs. And then, Thursday, Friday will be my songs, Amanda's songs, Gareth's songs as well.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just keep playing songs. That's what we'll do, isn't it?
It's funny that is like an amazing segue into our Father's Day interviews as well. So, hey, you play these songs and you'll end up being a father.
Spot on, Sia. See, you must get back to segueing. That's your strength, not stretching the truth.
That's my segue. Oh, thank you, Ben. Thank you.
So we've got these really great Father's Day interviews. Now, yesterday there was a really great interview with Craig Wilkinson. Mm. And as Sia said earlier in the show, he is, for a limited time, actually offering his book for free. Now, people were messaging yesterday saying how his book was hugely insightful. So if you get onto that, details will be in the first hour podcast. But Sia, for the rest of the week, the idea being that we would like to theme some of our interviews better as far as around content. So obviously the Father's Day theme, Sunday was Father's Day, and it's always a big talking point here in South Africa, as was pointed out over Twitter, as was pointed out, you know, just talking about a few incidents. But we had quite an interesting sort of guest list as far as people that Gareth did interview. Who else can we look forward to for the rest of this week? Because I know Timisho is coming up right now with his dad.
So the Masha's on this morning. We have the Lindsay's on a little later on this week.
Now, if you're not too au fait with the Lindsay's, there is a great broadcasting history there. Mm-hmm. Keith was a bit of a legend back in his day. And then Breton himself, he does have a show here as well. Mm-hmm. And he's very involved in the media world. Super, super smart guy. Very, very switched on. And that will be tomorrow's interview.
I think on Thursday, more like it.
Sorry, but of course, today's only Tuesday.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so we got a whole bunch of really, really great dad interviews.
But you know what I love, especially about the interview that we're about to play now, is part of what we try to do in this week of Father's Day interviews is to depict various parts of the spectrum of fatherhood. You know, there's this stereotypical fatherly love, but what also goes into being a father? It's about making sacrifices. It's about forgiving your child. It's about accepting them for who they are. And I think this interview does that and hits the nail right on the head. So it's Tumisho Masha from the Weekly Mashup. And of course, if we listed his CV, we'd be here till, you know, kingdom come. And his father, Rodney, and they speak about, I really do think it's like so intimate, this interview. They speak about love. They speak about life. They speak about disappointment. And hey, speak about some women as well. So they're confronting some real hard issues about Tumisho's public life, and the chances and the sacrifices that his father Rodney had to take. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. It is an interesting one.
Yeah, I've known Tumisho for quite some time, and something I've always liked about the guy is that he does throw it out there. Like, he's obviously a great actor. He's done various things. The only South African to ever play Nelson Mandela in a movie. Mm. I think one of his many claims to fame, of which he has many.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's done it all. And sure, he's made mistakes just like anyone else. But he's always just been a pretty consistent, great guy around here in the studios. He's very friendly. He's hugely charismatic. And now you can get to know more about him and his dad.
Father's Day is a time where we get together and we think about the man who had the biggest influence in our lives. And many of us in this country are not able to celebrate Father's Day properly because we know that we've got an issue in society in South Africa around fathers. One of the people I know has a tremendously good relationship with his dad and who considers his dad to be fundamental to all of his success is one of the members of our family, and that's Tumisho Masha. His dad, Rodney, is with us this morning. Hey, Tumisho.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Good, brother. I'm very good. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, man.
And Mr. Masha. Hello. What a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to see you too.
Now, I have loads of questions for you about this famous son of yours, but we'll talk about him in a moment or two. Let's first talk about you because you're the one we don't know that well yet.
Yes.
What's your story? What have you done in your life? Where have you been? Where were you from? Give us a little bit of background.
Okay. I'm from Pretoria, Mamelodi, but I was born in Rittendale in Pretoria, in one of the suburbs. And during the times of the forced removals, we moved from that place, Rittendale, to Mamelodi in the township. And that's where I was growing. That's where I was attending school, primary, high school, until I started working as well before I went to university. So I'm from Pretoria, basically.
Let's just stick on the forced removal thing for a moment, because this is a story about South Africa's history. A lot of people think our history only started somewhere in the 90s, you know.
Yes.
The stuff that happened before that, there were – obviously there were newspapers and things, but most of those stories, the personal stories – have gone unwritten.
Yes,
you know, a lot of the pain and the suffering and the kind of the fact that people were really just numbers and were treated like you were just told you're going to move to here. You didn't have a say in it.
No, we didn't. And at that time when we were moved, I was about 5 years, but I could see what was happening, which at the same time I didn't understand exactly what's happening. We didn't understand why are we moved from this place to another place that we don't know. And we didn't understand at the same time why our parents feeling like this, crying, complaining. It was quite hectic and it was quite painful. We didn't know exactly, but we moved.
And so far away from where you were before.
Very far.
And where all the work was and where everybody that you knew stayed. And
yeah, it was very far. And as I say, I was only 5. I was not working, but at the same time, it was quite far. My mother then had not started working. It was the time just after my father's death. It's unbelievable. Mm. And she had to move with these children, with her children, to this place, which is foreign. It had to happen, and we moved. And when we arrived there, we had to make something out of it. And here we are today. Mm.
Well, it sounds like, despite all of this hardship, you had no desire to just be ordinary. And you mentioned earlier that you went to school and you went to university. I mean, that was a difficult thing for your generation to even get into university.
It was very difficult, but I had this in me. I wanted a better life, especially at the time I had no children. I was not married. As I say, I was still very young, but I had this in me that, the day I have my own children, they are just not going to go through what I'm going through at that time. They must and they will have a better life than I was at the moment going through. And that was the thing that really kept me going, that really I have to struggle and I have to improve myself so that the day I have these children and their mother, they should have a better life. That was the one thing that really kept me going. And at the same time, I had to think about myself as well, because it was tough. I was telling myself that I have to have a better life. And as I was growing, starting to work and working for the people in the township, cleaning their gardens and their houses, as a promotion from that level, I went to work in town. That was a bit higher than working in the township. Yeah. I started working for white people. And this whole thing came to reality that really I have to live like these people. I have to have a house like these people. But to have a house like that, to have a car, to have a better life, I had to do something. And really I did.
What did you study and what did you enroll for at university?
At university then, I went for a BA degree majoring in economics and geography. But that was not my major aim to study for a BA degree, but I had to go for it because it was the period of studying for a BA degree to me was a bit shorter than having to study for a degree that I wanted with all my heart, that is medicine. At the time, and still now, medicine is about 6 years. So I had to go for a degree that would take me a few years to finish so that I can start working for myself.
Is that because you knew you didn't have enough money to do medicine?
I didn't have enough money to study medicine. And at the same time, to study medicine, to get entrance at the University of Natal for medicine. And then the campus was called the Wentworth campus in Durban. Mm. That was for the non-whites at that time. All non-whites went to that campus. So to study medicine, the competition anyway was very high because they were not taking a very big number. And it was for every person who was then recognized as non-white. It was for Indians, it was for colors, it was for African people. Every person who was not black had to go to that university to study medicine. So the entrance at the same time was not easy. That's why sometimes you find that many people, many African people had to do these other degrees like engineering, law and the BA degree. That's why I had to study this because I knew that finishing this junior degree, I'll go for a teacher's diploma, then I can become a teacher, which was a profession as well. So that's what I did. And as I say, it was not easy. I had to apply for bursaries to take me through. I had to work during school holidays, university holidays. What was wonderful with the bursaries then, we got loan bursaries from the government, which we paid back after finishing university, which is a thing that I wish our government was doing for our students. If the government would allow to give students at university loan bursaries without an interest, that would take them far than for the students today having to go to banks for loans and at the time of them finishing university education to have to pay for those loans.
It's mad.
Throughout, with interest,
it just kills you.
It kills them. But then it was an apartheid government. But I think when it came to that, it really thought it did a very good thing for us because after finishing my degree, I had to repay them, and which was easy. Unfortunately, at the same time, is the time that I was married at the time, so I had to look after my wife as well. Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's never easy because just when you jump over one hurdle, then there's the next.
It's life, eh?
And of course, you'd married this woman and you were very much in love and you wanted to start a family, but now there are other costs that come into it. So just when you're about to repay all your previous debts, there's more.
Yeah.
Now, with Father's Day around the corner.
Yes.
I mean, it sounds to me like you're the kind of guy who has passed on a lot to your son in terms of your own experience and your own knowledge.
Yes.
But I'm curious because Dumisha works really hard. He does a lot of things.
Oh, he does.
And I think he got that from you.
Yes, he did. But at the same time, I mean, he self-motivation, really. He's pushing himself very hard. He's working very hard for himself, you know. It's not that he's doing this because solely of my pushing him, encouraging him and all that. Fortunately, for me as a father, to see him pushing himself like this, to see him working so hard for himself, that is a thing that really I appreciate and I'm very thankful of that as well. Because many people, many children, you know, they have to be pushed like forever. But with Dumisho, you don't have to push him. I'm not pushing him, and he's doing very well for himself, and I'm very thankful of that to him and as well as to the Almighty for that. Thank you.
I wonder what it's like when you're a man who's used to having worked so hard to get ahead and to create a life for your family. And and your son comes to you and goes, I want to go into entertainment.
It wasn't easy,
I want to go into acting. I want to be
And it wasn't entertainment at the time. It was like acting or music. And it was quite vague because even I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
Did you go, oh, no, I was really hoping for a scientist or a businessman?
I did. I didn't understand. I knew people were acting, but at the same time, I didn't know that they had to go to study for acting at the time. Because with me, I believe in education. So I thought, for him to have a better life for himself, he must go study for something, you know, law, accounting, medicine, or something, but not for acting. Because at the time, I thought acting was solely a talent, and you could just leave school from a very early in life and you
start working immediately.
Start working, you know, start talking. But I didn't understand that at the time.
Did you see any signs in Dumisho when he was a younger man that he had this talent?
Yeah, but later, at the time, I didn't know really, because at that time, during those years, acting, we didn't know much about acting, much about drama. But at my older age, I could now see that what he was doing as a child then, that was a sign or something to show us or to tell us that this young man is not for this kind of life. I mean, for law and other kind of life. He's an actor. Yeah, that came very late in my life. And I remember all things that he used to do at that very age, early age, like when he was at Crèche. The poor guy, I remember the principal calling me and his mother in to say, now, your child is very young. He was only 4 then. But at the same time, we can't keep him at this Crèche because now he knows all his rhymes. He does everything. He's leading. And at the same time, the way he knows his rhymes, he as well, you know, can act in such a way that he makes, how can I put it? He makes other children younger than him or same age to do things that sometimes, because he's so advanced, he can really think for himself as well and do something that would not be in the book as such, like everyday.
So he already was showing signs.
He was showing that, and we went, and he told us, she told us, this lady, that we must take him out. So Dumisho was taken out of Crèche to primary school at the age of 5.
Wow.
So at the age of
you're
5.
Like he's like an advanced genius child, gifted.
I was a prodigy, a child prodigy.
Yeah, listen to you.
And it just changed when I got older. I got dumber over the years.
Yeah.
Dumisho, what was it like growing up in your house when you were young? Do you remember any particular things about your dad and your mom and kind of the way that you guys grew up as opposed to everybody else?
I think what was different that I noticed about my parents was they were very dedicated to each other, which was like really cool, you know? I think that was one thing as a child I never had to worry about, because you hear about so-and-so's parents are separated or they're getting divorced, and it just never factored in my life, which was very stabilizing. But the one thing was they were very strict, you know. They didn't take no crap.
We are very strict.
And he's mellowed out, my dad, you know. He's cool now, but he wasn't like this when he was
younger. You guys used to fight a little bit? Did you find that he was telling you to do things you didn't want to do, and he was
definitely
cramping your style?
Look, I've always been a very high risk taking human being. I believe in life you've got to try.
Yeah.
And if you fail, oh well. So everything that I did was contrary to how, you know, they felt life should be.
You felt that you should play it safe, do the things that you know you can count on. stay in your lane, you know?
I don't stay in lanes, man. No, you know?
He doesn't.
Was he difficult to discipline as a child?
He was difficult, but not difficult, you know.
I was naughty, though. I have to admit. I admit that.
But at the same time, I wanted to give him that chance of being himself. I knew that he is basically, and I could see that he's not exactly like me. I'm a bit reserved, and I toe the line. And again, I didn't want to raise him the same way, like the way we were raised by our parents. Our parents were very, very, very strict. And at the same time, as I said, I didn't like that kind of strictness. So I had to be a bit, you see, a bit
You want to be a bit more balanced.
Yes, with my children. But at the same time, I told myself that I cannot give them that kind of free life because I still have to raise them and I still have to make them grow in such a way that they become human beings in their life to come.
Like independence.
You know? Independent.
And it does take discipline, right? It's not easy because
it's not easy.
Especially with creative kids. Especially with kids who are talented and who like attention and getting, you know, because when you were growing up, you must have been, everybody loved you.
I was an attention seeker. Yes. I love to entertain people, so I would do anything. I mean, if there was a party, I would dance for the grown-ups so they could like give me cash. That's what I did, you know.
If you were a girl, you would have been a stripper.
Probably. I probably would have, you know, just to try it out.
Can you imagine?
But I think the great thing is you realize only when you're older that the discipline that you're getting as a child is so important. Because if it was up to me, Gareth, I would have left school in standard three because I felt like I'd learned everything that they could offer me at school, and now I was ready to go into the world and do my thing. But my dad insisted, and my mom as well, that you've got to stay in school, you've got to finish, you've got to have the basis, you know, you've got to have some sort of an education in the world. And you've got to be responsible for other people other than yourself, which I think is one of the most important things a parent can teach you, that as much as you have your own ideas and your own dreams, and they support that because they really did. I mean, if I came home and I said I wanted to play the flute, I'd get a flute. If I wanted to play piano, I'd get piano lessons.
Yes.
If I wanted to do drums, you know, whatever I wanted to do, they gave me the space to do, which is like awesome. And
so you never really felt deprived?
No, I didn't. Mm-mm. No, I did not at all. Not at all. I mean, fortunately, I didn't want to become an F1 driver because that would have been a bit complicated.
Any of us would feel deprived. But Dumisha, the thing that interests me here too is that, you know, there are a lot of kids who grew up, especially in our generation, who grew up without father figures.
Yeah.
That don't have any good male influence. The only person they've either got a mother or a grandmother or both who are there to provide. Sometimes they work two jobs, three jobs, four jobs. They're sometimes not even at home because they're trying to make sure that their kids get food and, you know, the basics. I mean, there are a lot of people who are still suffering in South Africa. But in our generation, there are a lot of kids who grew up without dads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the father, without the father there, showing you how you can control yourself, how you can use your feelings to your advantage, how you don't only have to act in a violent way, or you don't only have to treat women a certain way. Mm-hmm. I mean, to have had that is a privilege, actually.
It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, the one thing that my father taught me about marriage, and it's funny because you think that I'd be really good at this, right? and we've proven that I'm not really, but I'm learning.
Hey, we all make mistakes.
Is I guess, you know, romance and. It's not a chore because a lot of people are like, they're just married. It's like, you know, it seems like something that's not very fashionable. But they made it fun. They made it seem like it was a partnership. And it certainly was. You know, my parents, my mom is a doctor. My dad is the kind of man who's had his own success. And they just made it work. There was never any competition between them. There was always cooperation. And there was a lot of love. And that was the one thing that I really am very grateful for, growing up in a home with a lot of love, you know, love between themselves, between each other, and love for their children. You know, you really felt that, like, if they could afford it and it made sense in terms of your personal development, you could have it. That was the only deal that we had at home, that if it's affordable within the means, because then you're not the only child, and it is for your personal development. Whatever you want, you can have. Mm. So that was great. I mean, I could have anything. I was the kind of kid who grew up having, like, I had keyboards growing up, and synthesizers and musical instruments. And I had a library. I asked for an encyclopedia. We didn't have Google. So if you want to know stuff, you had to have an encyclopedia.
Old school, man.
Yeah, you know. So I had an encyclopedia, man.
Yeah.
And my friends would come around during school holidays and be like, what's up with this encyclopedia? And I was like, but this is fun.
You because can look there's up stuff. Anything.
Yeah. What do you want to know? You know. So from an early age, that's one thing that they taught me as a married couple as well, that they're a partnership, and their partnership is to improve the lives of not only their children, but the society at large. Mm. I mean, there were always kids coming into our house that were being put through school by my parents. There were families that were being helped out. Mm. That sense of community and helping other people. You have the means, you got to help other people. Mm. It's something that I'm grateful for now, because, heck, it's not even like it's a charity. I think for me, it's a selfish act. When you help other people, you yourself get so much in return. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand that unless they've been in a position where they feel what it feels like to make a difference in someone else's life. When you don't have to, you don't have a responsibility, but you're doing it because you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels good. I mean, this is really what is at the heart of communities that work, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
And there's so many things that we could talk about in South Africa that are wrong. But to me, one of the things that we do have is we have a lot of people who support each other and don't expect anything in return.
No, we shouldn't. Mm.
What made you like that? I mean, can you explain where that might have come from in you and your wife and the way that you felt in your community?
The what again?
Just why you and your family felt that you needed to
help others
and to reach out and to...
I think it was, number one, we come from poor families. And in the townships then, not now. I don't know now exactly, because I've moved away from the townships. Families would help one another. I remember when my mother was raising us, as I say, I was raised by a single parent because my father died very early. But now my mother used to do things like this when she came home with maybe some extra food, for example, extra like bread or maybe fruits and what have you. She would half that and give it to the next door mother who by not of her own doing, she was not working. But for the fact that my mother knew that during the day when she's at work, this next door lady does look after us. Mm. So my mother saw it important and necessary that she had to help the mother next door as well. So we grew with such things that in the township, people used to give things to one another. What you have, I'll give you. What I have, I'll give the next door person as well. What the next door person has will give to me back as well. So that's how we were raised. So that was inculcated into me, so that when I grew, when I had all these things, when I got married, when my wife told me that she wanted to go to medical school as well, it was very easy for me because, number one, anyway, I loved education. I love education. Because of that, I was very happy that my wife wants to go to university and she wants to do medicine. But at the same time, I knew that I'm going to help her. You know, she will become better. And by her becoming better, she will repay it in inverted commas by giving us a better life. Like today, we have a better life because my wife is still working.
In some ways, also, your wife got to fulfill her dream that you never got
she had to
in medical school.
Yes, because my wife is a... She's a real, really, real doctor. You know, she loves medicine. She loves helping sick people. And I realized that there's no use of my having her to myself than not having her together in inverted commas, with the society around,
helping
with
people.
The people, helping people, because that's what she loves. And like now she's moved from pure medicine, clinical medicine. She's now going to clinics. She's now going to hospitals. She does liaise with doctors and nurses and sick people to like help them, teach them, especially now she's more on HIV and TB. Now she does a lot in that line as well. Now that is helping the society and the country at large.
Now, you've got a famous son. I mean, people know him. He's recognized that he's good looking. There's lots of women in the country.
He's good looking.
Yeah, yes. He is. Did he get the good looks from you or the wife?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
He's going to take that.
So Dumisha is often, you know, he's well known as an actor on stage, on screen. Mm. He's done lots of stuff that I suppose many actors would love to have on their CV. It must make you very proud that he's so publicly successful. Like, you don't, other people have to say, this is my son or my daughter, and they do this. You don't have to say anything. You go, you have a family gathering or whatever, and Dumisha pitches up, and the whole, the whole city wants to know what's going on, right?
That I know. Yeah. That I've seen as well. I'm very happy. I'm very proud that, he is what he is today. And, as you say, wherever I go with him, through him, people recognize me. They know me. They can really pay attention to me as well. But this is for him. It's not for me. Because what I found again, when I'm introduced to people, like people who know them, who know him, they will not at times, and in many times, introduce me as Rodney Masha. Mm. They will always introduce me as the father of Dumisha. Do you know Dumisha? But until the name Dumisha is mentioned, they don't know me, which is fine. But at the same time, I want to be known as me, not to be known as Dumisha. Instead, Dumisha is the one who should be known as me. Not I.
Yeah, right, you know, exactly. As God damn it. Sure. Know your place.
But, yeah.
He may be.
But I'm happy. It's him. It's fine. It's Dumisha. So.
But I mean, often you will have to read stories about him in the news and you'll have to confront some controversy. That must also be irritating for you, because you know the real Dumisha. You know what kind of a man your son is. Mm. And you know also that there's a huge amount of interest in him because he's a celebrity. Mm. And some of that must be difficult for the family to put up with.
It is very, very difficult, and it is very heartrending to see such news in the paper. But at the same time, life is life. We are not perfect. We do take it. If he's done it, it's fine. He's done it, but it's not good. We don't accuse him of this. We don't fight with him. We sit down and we talk to find out exactly what is happening. But he's a human being. It's Dumisha. He's not perfect. He's a human being. He makes mistakes like everyone. I'm not condoning that, but can I do? It's like that.
Well, I mean, also, you know, as you say, that nobody's perfect and everybody has a path to walk.
Yes.
And sometimes that path goes in all kinds of directions. What is exciting, though, is that you get to also share in his success. I think a lot of people don't have their parents around when they reach real success. And Dumisha in his life so far has had tremendous and very public success. So it's nice for him to be able to say, hey, take a look at this. I wonder how many people, Dumisha, have fathers that they want to live up to, that they want to impress, that they want to show, I've made it, Dad.
It's a privilege, you know.
And they're not there.
It's a privilege.
Yeah, it's a privilege. It's a great thing. It's an honor for me to have a father who I do want to impress. And you know, from day one, actually, he says all these things like he didn't know. But he used to come to all my plays, eh? Like, a silly little recital, you know, when I was 5 years old, he'd be there. He'd make time from his work schedule. Mm. And this is the time when he was working in Joburg. And we were staying in Soshanguve in Pretoria, which I don't know if you've ever been there. It's just far.
Far, dude.
Yes.
You know, if I had a soccer game during the week, more than anyone, my dad would always be there. In fact, he was known to always, like, he supported all my soccer games, all my plays he came to see, which I think as a kid is very encouraging. I really believe that it's what has made me what I am today, because I was just trying to impress my dad. Mm. To this day, I'm still trying to, and sure. he's there. Mm. And it's great because it's not like the impress my dad to say, well, you left us, so look what I've become mm-hmm. without you. It's more like, hey, all the opportunities you gave me, all the things that you did for me, mm-hmm. let me show you how I can repay them, you know, mm-hmm. which is a great positive way of looking at your success mm-hmm. by going, I kind of feel like I owe him this, but not in a negative way, but no, in a good, like positive, like enforcing. All the things that yeah. you did, I want to show you that, you know, you invested in me and it was an investment well placed. And that's mm-hmm. amazing. Yeah. And I'd just like to say about the controversy as well. The best thing about it is realizing that I too am just human. Sometimes, you know, in this industry, you can be put on this pedestal and treated like a demigod. And you need to always remember that no matter what, you are actually just a human being, hey?
And when you go home to your parents' house, you're just their kid.
You're just their kid. Exactly.
They're not going to treat you like the king of the stage.
Yeah. Mm. And it helps with your personal development and your career to know that I'm just lucky enough to be doing what I'm good at, that I love, with people around me that are great at what they do. So every time I go out there and I'm with the people I work with, whether here on the radio, or on set, I have a different kind of joy now where it's like, I'm so fortunate that I have all these amazing people around me that make me look amazing. Mm-hmm. Isn't that like what we
That's
dream about?
That's the best thing, right?
In the whole world. Yeah.
What do you want for Dumisho? What do you dream for him that maybe he already has or that he hasn't got yet that you would like to see?
Number one, I would like for Dumisho, really, this is from my heart and it pains me at the same time at his age, is that Dumisho should have a family, you know, a stable, like, family, which is normal. I mean, sometimes I do put myself and say, I have a family. I have Dumisho at this age, at my age and his age. But now it looks like with him, his life, he's still, you know, he's struggling or whatever. Things are not working out for him. That's number one thing that I would like for him to have. But
he's got a very different life to you.
Yeah, it's very different.
You know, these days there's the old idea of the family. Which, I mean, we both respect. Dumisho and I are both raised by parents who stayed together. And, you know, they've had kids and the kids love the parents. And the parents love the kids. So we're lucky. Mm. But the fact is these days, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but Rodney, I don't want to get into a fight with you.
but
you know, the idea of the family has changed. I mean, there's a lot new there's unconventional ways of looking at this.
No, you're true. You're right. It has changed, but you know, we are from the old school. We still have to learn and we still have to understand the life of today, because I think the life of today is miles ahead of us. It's leaving us behind, but we are learning and we'll understand, because like, as I say, with Dumisho, my one son is married. At least he's happy. My two daughters, by this time, who are my other daughter is about, she's about 30, and 31. The other one, 31, and the other one is 30. They're not married as yet, but I do understand, as you say, is this kind of life. So as I say, we are learning, although the life of today, the way you look at things today, it's much ahead of us. So we are coming.
What do you say to that?
Yeah.
I think he's completely right, though. Mm. I think that's what I want for myself, to be honest. Mm. I've always wanted to be a married family man. I think that's so cool. You know, I don't know. It's just some things, they don't work out. But I believe in one thing as well, that don't be defined by your failure. Be defined by always getting up and trying again. Mm. So I'm willing to try again, Gareth. Mm. I hope you can come and MC my wedding this time. Maybe it might work.
You don't need any magic, dude. You know what it is? It's also like grandchildren are an important part of this, right? Mm. Like there's something about having grandchildren that kind of makes the circle
very
complete.
Important.
Mm. I mean, maybe that's also do your other kids have you got with your other son any grandchildren?
My son, I have two. With Dumisho, I have one at least. I have one with Dumisho, and with my other son, I have two so far. So I have three grandchildren. My daughter's no grandchildren as yet, but I'm looking forward to that, that one day they'll be having their own children, you know, but it will happen. But if it doesn't, life today, as I say, it's like that. It's fine. So I'm learning and, I'm fine with it anyway.
What do you wish for your dad? I mean, it sounds to me like he's really lived an incredible life. He's achieved much.
Yeah.
He's done wonders for all of his children and his wife in terms of trying to provide and produce and be a useful member of society in more ways than one.
Yeah.
But what do you wish for him?
I wish him long life and health more than anything else. You know, that sense of just being healthy. And getting to see some of these things that he's always wanted to see, the dreams that he has, more grandchildren, actually happening for him. Mm. And peace, just the sense that everything's going to be all right.
Mm.
You know, I think he's at that age now where I'd like for him to let go of the sense that he's the one who has to make everything all right. We got this now.
Mm.
We got this.
Yeah, I have to learn that they've got it as yet, now, but, it's fine. I'm okay. It's true at the same time that I need now to cool down. Really.
Yeah, relinquish some of the responsibilities, right?
Yeah.
At my age now, I'll be 70 next month, on the 27th of June. So I think it's that time now I have to sort of relax and let them.
Are you still working?
No, I'm not working. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not working at the moment.
But retired.
I'm retired. But if I had the strength and the health, I still wish that I would still be working. But I don't have the strength now. It's very difficult and I'm not too well.
Like. Are you have health concerns?
Yes. It's like I had a back operation. I had a problem with my back a few years ago, and I had to undergo an operation. And I have all these kind of ailments which people wouldn't understand on the radio. Like,
and it slows you down, right?
It does slow me down, like what they call Cone syndrome and hypokalemia, all those kind of things.
Well, your wife knows what all those are.
Oh, she does. And it's a blessing having a doctor in the family because she knows all about this. And if I had to get medication sooner and what have you, she's there. She prescribes. And in no time, I'm okay. Then I can see the next day. But otherwise, because of that, really, I think I have to take it cool and relax.
Yeah.
But if I was a bit healthier, I still wish that I would still be working. And for example, I think today's coming to see you has given me, shown you that if I had that chance, I would be working on radio as well.
Well, you definitely have the personality. Now, what about the thing I brought up with Dumisha earlier, that there's so many kids who are growing up without dads? I mean, do you feel that that's something we can win in South Africa? Do you think it's something we can beat? Because it is a problem that there are so many men growing up who don't know how to deal with other men, with women, because they never have that role model.
No. The thing of having to beat it, that the children growing without dads, that is not going to happen. It's still going to happen that there would still be more children without fathers. But the thing is that children without fathers, they have to as well take it upon themselves. They shouldn't blame or think of the fact that they don't have fathers. They are not going to become better people tomorrow or mean. I mean, for example, as I said in the beginning, I was raised by a woman. My father died when I was very, very young. I was about 5-6 years old when my father died. And that did not mean that life had come to an end. So children without dads, they must understand the fact that that is a fact. They don't have dads, but that does not stop them in any way of becoming dads tomorrow, of becoming whatever they want to become tomorrow. We must stop this excuse of saying that I didn't have a father. That's how I treat women like that, because I didn't see it in the family. Or I'm going to do these wrong things because I didn't have a father. No, it doesn't work because there won't be time where every child will be having a father.
So in other words, you're saying you've got to take personal responsibility for this and make the best of a bad situation.
Yes.
I think that's one thing that my dad also taught me. It's about you don't have to be handicapped by anything in life. Mm. You can. You don't have to have everything working perfectly in your favor for you to succeed. In fact, you will never have everything perfectly working in your favor. That's right. You have to go out there and play with a niggle.
Yeah. Mm.
So just go out there and do your best. Play the best game you can, even if you're carrying a slight injury.
Mm. Mm. That's it.
Well, I mean, you've raised an impressive son here. This is a guy who's changed the world in his own ways.
Yeah,
and just like you changed the world, he's going to take that family of yours forward.
Mm, thank you.
It's lovely to meet you.
Thank you,
Dr. Rodney. And I wish you luck. You're obviously the kind of man who is not only a pillar within your own family, but even to the community at large.
Yes.
And you and your wife have done some job with your children. So I wish you the best, and I hope
Thank you
have a happy Father's Day.
Yes.
I hope that you and Dumisha will come and visit us again sometime soon.
Yes, thank you.
That'd be great. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's a real honor. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, that was Tumisha with Dad Rodney, one of our many fascinating Father's Day series of interviews that Gareth did prior to going to Germany. You can catch more tomorrow being Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the whole week basically tying in with the whole Father's Day theme. Just about time to wrap it up here for the Tuesday. Gareth will be back tomorrow 6 a.m., as all of us will be. He'll be on the Skype while we talk about his trip to Germany and what he's up to. He's doing some really interesting things, and today is his panel discussion day where he's actually talking with a whole bunch of interesting people around media, free speech in media, and all those kind of things. But guys, just before we do wrap it up, there's quite a few stories I didn't quite get to today, but one of them I just thought I'd open up because it'll make you think. Earlier, I played a clip about the fact that we shouldn't indulge bullshit in day-to-day life as much as we do.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm going to... Wow, how do I even enter the story? Ever heard of a breatharian?
A what?
A breatharian.
A breatharian.
Oh, no. Wait. Where is this going?
Would this person be in any way similar to people who hug trees?
Well... is it like I'm
maybe.
Hearing vegetarian?
You're on a better track there.
But how do you survive off bread? Oh,
but that's just it. They're these people, okay. And now, while I was listening to the interview with Tumisha and his dad, I was obviously because when you see a story, you think it's bullshit, right? You've got to check it. Are the sources covering this? What kind of sources are covering this? This is something we should all be checking because of the whole fake news thing.
Mm.
And breatharianism is a thing. You only survive on breath, on the air that you take in, the energies of the universe, and you don't eat actual food.
Yeah, well then, if it's a thing, it's going to be a thing for X amount of time before you drop.
And die.
And
well,
yes.
Okay, so on a variety of articles that I found, there's this couple, Costello and Ricardo, and they've been breatharians together for like 9 years, and they've had two kids, okay? She gave birth to a child by being a breatharian.
There is not a chance.
But this is what I think, right? So I read this article, I read a whole bunch of other articles, and it's all very similar stuff. So basically, they survive on the energies of the earth, and obviously they do things like yoga, and they breathe, and that's where they get all the nutrients, and they get everything they need, their sustenance. So their whole point is that the world is obsessed with food, and food is killing us, and food costs so much money. So they're saying, we don't really eat. They might have like a grape for a special occasion or something. Otherwise, they just breathe.
No.
I know this sounds like bullshit, but you got to look into this.
You can't survive, like literally, figuratively, scientifically, you can't survive without food.
I get you, okay? And I love food and love the process of it and it's fun. But if there is, let's just say this is true, right? Now, if you go into YouTube or anywhere, you'll find very strange-looking people who swear by it, which always gets me, right? Like, why can't you do things in life and not have to look like you, Gandalf's friend from Lord of the Rings? Everyone looks a bit weird. But let's just say this does work, right? You imagine the money you save if you never have to buy food in your life.
True.
Wow.
I do think that they are onto something when they say that the world is obsessed with food. And we are obsessed with food.
True.
The sugar craze, the
melted cheese with everything.
The meat industry, the melted cheese with everything.
That's
the clear obesity rates, which are in our faces, are an indication that we are maybe a little bit obsessed with food. But they are on the other extreme. They are extremists themselves.
But at the same time, again, this is like
breatharians.
I mean,
guys, they do not spend money on food. So all that's what they say. We travel and we explore. We do things as a young family. It just seems, again, like I'm not trying to be cynical about this. Can you imagine if you only need breath? All you need, like the air, go through your lungs and you can survive. These people don't look like they're emaciated or anything. They're in shape. The woman said that she battled with weight fluctuations. Look, this story could be a whole bunch of horseshit. But like, I mean, indulge this one thing, contrary to my original story, is that imagine if you could actually live like this. Like I don't know if I could, but this could be one of the most fascinating things that I've seen.
Look, maybe they eat like snakes. You know, like how a snake goes hunting and then it eats a whole calf. And then it will be okay for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Won't eat a thing for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Bears hibernate for this
party. I am not here for this party at all. This is blasphemous. Like, what did a little tin roof ice cream do to you? What did a little
made you fat,
chips
yeah. It made you fat,
you?
Made you angry.
Okay, well, what did a fruit salad do to you?
It made you slight. It was okay.
Yeah, but exactly.
But can you just imagine
mac and cheese?
Imagine evolving to a point where you only need breath, right? Take away that, then everyone would be okay because nobody's hungry, right? I mean, hunger is a massive issue in this mm-hmm. world. Huge issue. Animals wouldn't be killed. I mean, like Amazon would be screwed because they just bought whole foods. They want you to eat.
But that
this is a very interesting thing.
No, but you see, that is how you know that there are holes to be poked in the story because of the one thing that you said, hunger. Hunger is a real thing because people starve and they have no access to food.
In our current mindsets, it is.
They are malnourished. Not in our current mindsets. That's what the biology and the science says.
Yeah.
They become malnourished. Some of them die. So how are these people managing to survive as so-called breatharians?
Yeah, I'm even reading.
How are they looking healthy?
Reading over the definition of breatharianism.
I mean, they have two children. What, do these kids not eat? Are they fully developed?
Look, okay, the kids are, they said, they understand what breatharianism is, but they're not being forced to follow the strict guidelines. So the kids, if they want to eat, they can eat.
It doesn't add up. Something doesn't add up to me. No.
That's my only question here. Imagine this is true. Just imagine this is true and just imagine like people with the whole like, I'm hungry. I need, no, you don't. Just breathe.
Girl, bye.
Can you imagine you pulling up at a traffic stop and the guy's like, money for bread. And you're like, no. I see through your story. You just better breathe and you'll be fine. Good luck in trying that one.
Yeah. I'm calling BS on this whole
yeah,
thing.
Absolutely.
It could just be you guys, but like, I don't think humans can do this. And again, it's like, I've tried to find if this is fake news or not. There's lots and lots of sources around this to talk about an actual thing, breatharianism.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so hopefully your day today is filled with lots of good fresh air. If it's not, then try to get out there. I know it's winter here in SA, but still, it's not so bad.
Well,
can be sunny.
The silver lining is if it's not full of fresh air, it's at least full of programming right on cliffcentral.com. Because at 9, we have Disrupt with Boomin Tlapo, powered by T-Systems. 10, the good stuff with Brenton Carey. At 11, we have a hashtag opinion booth with Sonia Booth. From 12, we have The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. At 1, we have The Daily Maverick Show. 2, Beyond Ears and Eyes. And 3, we have The Gareth Cliff Show replay. But don't forget, at 6 p.m., a new edition of The Renegade Report.
Yeah, those Renegade Report people, they've been doing some interesting things. Get a lot of hits.
Oh yeah.
Speak a lot of sense.
Oh yeah.
And again, as proven by Graham earlier, even if you don't like someone, it doesn't mean you have to hate them. And I'm gonna leave you on that. Actually, I'm gonna leave you with the words of Bertrand Russell back in 1959. He had this to say about future advice and how, just like Sex and the City, it still resonates today. Catch you tomorrow.
One last question. Suppose, Lord Russell, this film were to be looked at by our descendants, like a Dead Sea Scroll in 1,000 years' time, what would you think it's worth telling that generation about the life you've lived and the lessons you've learned from it?
I should like to say two things, one intellectual and one moral. The intellectual thing I should want to say to them is this. When you are studying any matter or considering any philosophy, ask yourself only, what are the facts and what is the truth that the facts bear out? Never let yourself be diverted either by what you would wish to believe or by what you think would have beneficent social effects if it were believed. But look only and solely at what are the facts. That is the intellectual thing that I should wish to say. The moral thing I should wish to say to them is very simple. I should say, love is wise, hatred is foolish. In this world, which is getting more and more closely interconnected, we have to learn to tolerate each other. We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like. We can only live together in that way. And if we are to live together and not die together, we must learn a kind of charity and a kind of tolerance, which is absolutely vital to the continuation of human life on this planet. CliffCentral.com